I'm very bought in on Deuce Vaughn being a generational talent at K-State, which is using Chris Kleiman's words, not mine. Okay, generational player for the program. And I discovered today with some introspection that it's because we've already normalized what he did against Kansas. 152 total yards, a touchdown. Nobody talking about it after the game because, ho-hum, that's what Deuce does. Oh, by the way, he's halfway through his freshman year. And let's think about it from this angle. He is carrying two entire rooms of the team on his back. And what I mean is, like you'd say, the running back room, the wide receiver room. He's carrying two position groups there, being the leading rusher and receiver on the team. He is dragging along a group of receivers that's been bitten by injury, transfer, and just general inconsistency. It's led to a really frustrating group, and Deuce has completely made up for that and allowed this team to still be 4-0 in the Big 12 in spite of it. That's on top of his duty as already becoming K-State's best running back and taking the lion's share of the carries at running back and the lion's share of the touches at running back, making up for the fact that Harry Trotter is still Harry Trotter and pretty limited in what he can do when it comes to running the ball. The fact that Jacardier Wright has not taken a real step forward. The fact that Joe Urban decided to opt out. Like, he has shouldered all of those problems and all of those things that K-State would be dealing with without him, likely at like 2-3 right now instead of 4-1. And we'd be feeling so much differently about this season, this team, this program. And Deuce has been able to just put all of that on his back, no problem, and keep everything moving forward. As frustrated as you get by the receivers, I'm speaking to you fans now, because I see the frustration in my Twitter mentions every Saturday. As frustrated as you get by the receivers, think about what Deuce is doing. And think about how much he's been able to neutralize that and where your frustration would be had he not been there doing that. And that says a ton about just what kind of a player this guy is. He's as exciting a young player as K-State has had in forever. And I know everything traces back to Tyler Lockett. Lockett was not as productive, but he definitely had his moments as a freshman in 2011 that had you real excited about him and where he was headed in his future. But I started thinking, you know, let's pair him with Will Howard. I know Will Howard's not, he's not on Deuce's level in terms of impact as a freshman. He's not on Deuce's level in terms of skill level relative to his position right now, as Deuce is. And in large part, I think it's just because of the nature of the position, that it's a more difficult position to come in right away and play. But he's shown enough. Like, there have been enough flashes, in particular thinking about those three drives against Kansas, where you say, this kid's got some real potential and some talent, and he's only a true freshman. So I got to thinking and looking, like, when is the last time K-State had a true freshman or a pair of young players this talented together on offense? Quarterback skill position combo, this young and talented. And it's, you have to go pretty far back, and you have to start stretching some definitions of each of those words.
Thank you for that.
To determine what the answer is. I'll tell you the three pairs that I came up with here. You go back to 2011. Colin Klein's a junior, right? So it's not really fair to call him young, but he was young in the program sense, young in the how much he had actually been out on the field sense. It was just we saw a couple of games out of him in 2010. And John Hubert was a sophomore. Now, they definitely meet the qualifications with production. I mean, Colin Klein had 40 freaking touchdowns that year, 3,000 yards and 40 touchdowns. And John Hubert had over 1,100 yards from scrimmage. Like, he was also very good. But with one of those guys being a junior, I don't think I can count that. I can't count 2011 Colin Klein, John Hubert. Then I went back and it's like, okay, 2006. How about 2006, Josh Freeman and Leon Patton?
That would have been mine. Yep.
We were real fired up about that combo, which, I'm sorry to laugh, but in retrospect, it may have been more about the coaching than anything else. But it's funny that we were that fired up about it. And even then, I was looking through the stats and I was like, Josh Freeman threw 6 touchdowns and 15 interceptions as a freshman in 2006. So, like, as great as he was, and he was on his way to being a first-round NFL draft pick, 6 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. Woof. And then Leon Patton, he had 735 yards from scrimmage and 6 touchdowns. And I do, like, I genuinely remember being very fired up about Leon Patton. He's got 735 yards and 6 touchdowns. Deuce Vaughn has 696 yards and 5 touchdowns right now. Already. 5 games in. So in that one, it's the actual production that trumps everything. Like, they qualify. Both of those guys were freshmen. They qualify. But the production right now between Will Howard and Deuce Vaughn trumps what we saw from Freeman and Patton.
I remember Leon Patton early on in his career. It might have been his first game. He had an 80-yard run to open up a half. And I think it was against Florida International, if I remember correctly. And add on a couple more games in that non-conference, he was like the second best running back in the country. And I thought, this guy is the best running back, obviously, since Darren Sproles, and he's going to take us a long way. Like, this is your catapult in the Ron Prince era after those few games, after he was the second or third best rusher in the country. Didn't live up to the hype as much.
Had a sick run at Kansas, I can remember, in a game that they wound up losing in 2006. That was a really frustrating game, but just this unbelievable run along the sideline. He flashed. He did. He flashed, but then faded very quickly. So I would take it back to this. I would take it back to an imperfect comparison, but the best one that I can come up with here. L. Roberson and Darren Sproles in 2001 / like 2002. So I'm saying the 2001 season bleeding into the 2002 offseason, if that makes sense. Because in 2001, L obviously was splitting time at quarterback, and it was kind of a mess. And, you know, by the end of the year, he wasn't that good. But there were moments where he flashed dazzling potential. I mean, that game at Oklahoma in 2001 is still one of the best performances I've ever seen from a K-State quarterback. You knew that the potential was there. And then throw in Darren Sproles, who only had 210 yards that year, but again, in very limited action at a time when Snyder was not playing hardly any freshmen. Like, you could see just how much Sproles popped. So that's where I would go with it. And some of that is hindsight, knowing what those two turned out to be even at the time. But you're talking about freshman-sophomore pair in 2001, Roberson Sproles, building up into the 02 offseason, thinking that those guys were going to be obviously major factors on the team. It's the best comparison I can give you right now to a pair of players this young and this exciting and talented that K-State's had offensively if you're going quarterback skill position combo.
I tried to do my best to find two freshmen, and the only two I could find at the freshman running back or at the quarterback running back positions was Josh Freeman and Leon Patton, but I would flip-flop that. Deuce Vaughn was the Josh Freeman, and Leon Patton was probably the Will Howard when it comes to just star power, I would say, and who was the most popular on the team. But I think what you have, and I mean, we're thinking back years ago. We're up to 2 decades ago. I don't quite have the memory of what maturity was like back then with some of these young players. And when you think young players, you don't think of maturity, but I thought back in the last hour, if you go to the podcast after the show, if you didn't listen to the first hour and listen to Curry Sexton mention the maturity of these guys, I think that's what I appreciate about them the most, is how calm, cool, and collected these guys are. And post game, they're really great to listen to after every game. They know what they're talking about. They know the game well. And I'm to the point with them, I was already there with Deuce Vaughn, but with Will Howard and being thrown into the fire, he's got to earn your trust a little bit, right? He's at that point with me now where I think we know that he's not going to make you a nervous wreck to watch him play football. He's earned K-State's trust. It was the right idea to put him out there after Skylar Thompson went down with his injury. And the thing is, we're halfway through the season, and there's still more to come. There's still time for these. There's still the possibility these guys are going to make a few mistakes, which I don't think we can hate on them for, because they really haven't made any yet.
It's incredibly exciting about what they have because of what you touched on, what they are off the field combined with what they are on the field. And again, I would highly encourage you to read the Athletic article that's out there if you have a subscription from Max Olson today about Deuce Vaughn. You will read it and you will understand why I'm sitting here on a mic telling you, like, Chris Kleiman's right, this guy can be a generational player.
And I think it's fair to mention West Virginia is probably going to be their best test yet as a duo, as a true freshman duo, because West Virginia – obviously their defense is going to overshadow their offense. Their defense is what keeps them into ball games. But I still don't feel like it's going to be an absolute battle for these two guys to have a good game. I'm not expecting a big struggle. A mistake here or two, fine, whatever. Last year, that was a huge trap game. I mean, it just kind of came out of nowhere with that loss. And I still see this as a trap game. This is what makes me a nervous wreck, because this loss, which you're expecting K-State to win, if they did happen to lose that game, it's going to kind of really shake up the plans for this team.
I don't worry about the team taking it lightly or anything like that, or it being a trap game. I do worry about them losing the game. But I will say I'm becoming increasingly more confident as the week goes on. And we've got more time to talk about that. Believe me, we're going to talk about it. And the implications of this game, because there are many. There are a plenty. It's a massive game in terms of what it can do for the season. It's the biggest swing game of the season right now on the schedule, and can drastically change where the rest of this thing is headed. I didn't get to the DeSosa news. I'll tell you more about Silvio DeSosa coming up next. Also, an epiphany that I had this weekend about Skylar Thompson. You're listening to The Game.
Take me out to the ball.
So, Silvio DeSosa story for you here. I can already hear those of you that are aware of the story, the details of the story, that are K-State fans, rolling your eyes, being very skeptical about the timeline of all this and the timing of all of this. And I will say, I understand that. I do. I get it. I understand the skepticism here. However, I will say I am going to be careful with how I go about attacking this and saying that it is plausible what I'm hearing here from Lawrence Police Department spokesperson Patrick Compton about the case with DeSosa and the timeline on it, considering COVID and everything that's happened in the country. Okay, so here's what happened. Silvio DeSosa, the guy that was involved in the brawl at Allen Fieldhouse on January 21st last year, he is soon to be charged with aggravated battery, a level 5 or mid-level severity felony. The charging document was filed on Monday. It alleges that DeSosa unlawfully, felonously, and recklessly caused great bodily harm or disfigurement to another person. And the incident occurred on January 1st, so it was New Year's Eve, 2:36 a.m. January 1st in the 1100 block of Mass Street. So it's a bar fight, right? It's a bar fight. On New Year's Eve, January 21st was the day of the fight within Allen Fieldhouse, so he's still going at that point. But no charges were actually filed after the incident was reported initially to police on January 1st. So he's still playing on the team. January 21st comes around. He's involved in that brawl inside Allen Fieldhouse. And then October 16th, all of a sudden, he puts out a statement saying that he's leaving Kansas, and Bill Self has now sent out a statement today saying, yeah, after we found out about what was happening here with the details of this case, we decided it would be best for him to opt out. The DA's office says they received an affidavit and reports from the Lawrence Police Department on September 30th, and then received an updated affidavit from Lawrence PD on October 16th, and then the case was filed on Monday. So Patrick Compton is the spokesperson for the Lawrence Police Department, and he said, asked about the timeline of the investigation, Compton said it wasn't handled any differently from any other investigation. He said, in any case, there are a number of witnesses to interview and video surveillance to collect and review. He said those factors, compounded with coronavirus pandemic limitations, contributed to the length of the investigation. So what they're saying is, the reason that you didn't hear anything from January 1st until October 16th is an investigation combined with COVID. And so I know, like, the skeptical K-State fan, the skeptical Missouri fan is going to say, hey, this seems like an awful lot of help here from the Lawrence Police Department for nothing to happen right away. This is actually one of those areas, like, I'm just going to steer clear of that take. I don't know enough about policing. I don't know enough about what goes into these cases typically, especially combined with the pandemic. Like, that's the big thing here, the pandemic over the top of all of it. If that's just an excuse and covering things up, fine. It's going to work for me right now, because that's too much for me to go out there. I feel like I would be getting out over my skis to be coming up with some big conspiracy theory about the Lawrence Police Department, like, covering this thing up. Kansas has enough that you can legitimately attack them for right now, whether it's their football program, whether it's Self and the NCAA and the FBI and all of that. I don't need to be going out of my way to, like, kick dirt on Silvio DeSosa on his way out here. it's not a good look that the guy got in a fight in Allen Fieldhouse when 3 weeks before on New Year's Eve he had been in a bar fight in Lawrence. Like, I understand that. I get it. But I'm not going to do a whole lot of hemming and hawing about this. I'll just be honest with you.
Well, you know, it didn't take the Lawrence Police Department 10 months to investigate a shooting in Manhattan that did involve an officer with the RCPD. And the reason they were involved is because an RCPD officer was involved in the shooting that did kill somebody. Didn't take him 10 months for that. Obviously, that's a more necessary thing to investigate. But still, we are talking about a violent crime that took place. I mean, it's not like he just stole something. He walked out of a store with something. This is a pretty serious crime that took place. I understand there was a fight and there's more than one person involved. But for 10 months to take an investigation, I'll say it. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. COVID. Okay. That was the main reason. It's not stopping other departments from doing their job.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I get it. I understand it. I find it difficult, and what do I know about, like, police investigations and how this stuff usually goes down? I don't know how this relates to, like, what a typical bar fight investigation would be. I'm also not beyond saying have been some times where incidents like this happen and get kicked under the rug, or you get a little bit of help from the local police. I'm sure that it's happened around here before. I mean, I'm not citing specific examples. I'm sure that it happens all over the place with athletes and college towns and all that stuff. I'm not naive enough to think that it doesn't, but I don't know enough about this specific case, nor do I really care all that much about it. Maybe I should care more because we had the fight in Allen, but like, that was January 21st. That was like 8 lifetimes ago. I don't know, man. There's enough that I know I can tangibly go after Kansas for, that I know my brain can handle all the information and knows about, that I'll just focus on that, and I'm not going to be too crazy worried about this.
Well, it's less shocking. Silvio would have then been involved in that brawl in Allen Fieldhouse 3 weeks after his fight on Mass Street did take place. It's hard to really talk about this without doing a lot of speculation. I'm trying to stay away from that. I'm just saying it does sound fishy. I will say that. It sounds fishy. And if this didn't get out to where Silvio De Sousa is leaving the Kansas program, I mean, we might not even hear from Bill Self about it, unless it did get out. And now he's being pretty honest about it, and I appreciate that. But he's being honest because the information is out and the player's no longer a part of the team.
Right, exactly. He doesn't have a whole heck of a lot of choice at this point. Yeah. I had this dawn on me about Skylar Thompson over the weekend. My guy, man. Skylar, I think, would have been a top 3 quarterback in the Big 12 by the end of this year had he still been playing. I really do, because what did we see this weekend in the Big 12? We saw Brock Purdy choked in a big spot. I'm going to say it. Matt Campbell won't. He's going to blame it on the receivers. But Brock Purdy is supposed to be first-round draft pick guy. He's supposed to be first-round quarterback. He didn't get it done. He had 162 yards, no touchdowns, and a pick on Saturday against Oklahoma State in a giant spot. Big game. Everybody's watching. He choked, and he's having a so-so year. Like, Brock Purdy's had 2 games now where they have lost because the offense can't produce, and he's supposed to be the guy handling a lot of that. Outside of 2 giant runs from Breece Hall, Iowa State's offense really did nothing in the game against Oklahoma State. So, to me, it's not a given that Brock Purdy would be a top 2 or 3 quarterback in the Big 12. I think, by all accounts, Sam Ehlinger is the best quarterback in the Big 12, and Spencer Rattler is number 2. But after that, it's wide open. And, like, Brock Purdy just choked away a game in a big spot. Alan Bowman, you notice what he did on Saturday? Well, he didn't play because he was benched for Henry Columbia. So Alan Bowman, I mean, I remember all these Alan Bowman, Charlie Brewer v. Skylar Thompson discussions. Alan Bowman got benched. He wasn't even playing in Texas Tech's best performance of the season in beating West Virginia. And then Charlie Brewer, I don't know if you watched what the Baylor offense did against Texas, but they had 3 points through 3 quarters against Texas. And Charlie Brewer is 58th in the country right now in QBR. Like, he's not been anything special at all. I was reading on Ian Boyd. I told you that earlier in the show, and Ian Boyd was talking about how like the arm strength continues to decrease for Brewer, and there's so many limitations for him in the offense. Just a guy that's been beaten down, like battered and bruised throughout the years of playing with a bunch of injuries in the Big 12. So Brewer, Bowman, Purdy. Kansas, we know, doesn't have a quarterback. Jarrett Daigie has not taken off the way that I thought he would this year. Like, Daigie is not, it's all been Letty Brown for the West Virginia offense. I mean, it was right there for the taking for Skyler to actually be a top three quarterback in the league. I think by the end of the year, the way things were trending, it would have wound up with one Ellinger, two Rattler, and maybe you could switch the order of that depending on how much Oklahoma actually does surge here in their post-Red River surge. But it would be those two, 1-2, and then Skyler number three. Especially because I think K-State playing with Skyler Thompson had a good shot at the Big 12 championship game. I think right now K-State has an outside bordering on decent chance to make the Big 12 championship game. I think they had a good chance to make it with Skyler still continuing forward at quarterback. So I think all of that would have led to him being considered top three QB in the league by the time it was all said and done this year. And bygones be bygones. Like, nothing can change what happened. He's going to be out for the rest of the year. But I would be lying if I said there wasn't some frustration in that for me, because I'm somebody that's ridden as hard for Skyler as anybody around here, and it seemed like he was stepping in to play the best football of his career. And now the door opened in the league for a lot of things to happen for him. Make it to the Big 12 championship game and be considered in that top tier of quarterbacks in the league based on what everybody else around him was doing this year in a really difficult COVID year for everybody. So I'm sad. I'm sad about that. I'm genuinely sad about that, but I think Skyler would have been a top three quarterback in the league. I do. Mitch's number one song of the day is coming up next.
Mitch Fortner with your K-Man forecast right now in Manhattan. It is 48. Fair skies and a northeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, 30% chance of rain. Cloudy with a low around 34. The north wind is going to be picking up to about 20 miles per hour tonight. That wind will stick around for tomorrow with a high reaching 48. Pretty nice weekend for the end of October. Friday, my grandpa's birthday, sunny and 58. And on Halloween, it's Saturday, by the way, and it's sunny, 64. All right, here we go. You waited long enough. It's wait no longer. Time for the number one song of the day. You're listening to The Game on KMAN. You just want to take this one?
The edited version cracks me up, man. You can't let him say I've been popping pillies. You can't let him say I've been popping pillies.
You can't say that on the radio, John.
Guess what, everybody? Post Malone's popping pillies, and he's blanking some blanks because he's living like a rock star. I love this song, man. I mean, this is one of my favorite songs.
Oh, my God.
And I know you're going to make fun of the Post Malone part. Post is great, but the best part of the song is the 21 Savage version that comes. Verse that comes up here. 21 Savage and Post Malone, rock star. Probably came out in 2017.
2017, yes. This is probably the best part of the song.
I don't have I don't have auto tune. Oh, I mean, but like that's Post Malone's thing. I mean,
it's everybody's thing in pop.
Yeah, but like in particular, I mean, that's really what Post has made his career off of. But did you see that? I am not here to have Post Malone's talent disrespected.
Well,
did you see him do the Nirvana thing?
Yes. And here's the deal. Post Malone, I can get past this song. I can't appreciate his talent. He is a pretty talented person. Because I was going to bring up all the facts here. So this is Rockstar by Post Malone featuring 21 Savage, 8 weeks at number one.
You can't say Uzi? They edit out Uzi?
Yeah.
We're in Kansas. Doesn't everybody have an Uzi? I thought that's like standard with your driver's license around here. They just give you an Uzi.
Posty is an American singer, rapper, songwriter, record producer, and actor from Syracuse, New York. So he has really dabbled in a lot of genres.
pulling on her tracks, and now she's screaming out, no mas.
Pop, R&B, country,
hey, Savage, why you
rap,
got a 12-car garage and you only got six cars.
And grunge. He has worked with grunge before. He did do a about an hour and a half long. Okay, John.
This, always asking where the coke at.
This isn't post John. It's post Malone.
Actually, be 21 John. It's 21 Savage.
See, this is just
living
this
like
part does nothing
star,
for me.
Living like a rock star. Well, I
John,
mean,
it's
just murdered. I mean, like, the whole song and the verses are murdered because of it having to be edited. Like, it, you know.
You should know more than anybody, since you've been in radio for a decade, that it is an unwritten rule in radio. You never sing along with the song.
Oh, I think we've established here, I don't care. I mean, that's part of the beauty of this bit and this whole thing. Like, if I start singing, whether I'm making fun of it or it's a song that I actually like, there's humor, there's a reaction out of it, Mitch. Radio's about getting a reaction. So either you're pulling your hair out and you hate it, or you love it.
He's
so there's going to be a reaction.
Wasting his talent. He's a really good guitar player. He's a great drummer. I don't know what else he plays, but he's a musician. He's not a musician here. But according to Malone, he said he chose his name, his stage name, Post Malone.
Put it into a name generator, random rap name generator.
How old was he?
I don't know, like 16 or 17, but his name's like Richard Austin Post.
He was 14.
And so it gave him Post Malone.
He was 14 years
old. Play it again.
Old.
Roll it again.
Everybody thought it was after Karl Malone. He actually, so Post Malone has a place in Utah.
No, no,
it's not after
Karl
Malone.
He's a Dallas guy. He's from Dallas. He's a big Cowboys fan. He talks about the Cowboys a lot.
He's actually from Syracuse, New York. But.
Well, he spent his formative years in...
Why aren't you doing this segment? Why am I doing this?
He spent his formative years in Dallas. He's a Cowboys fan. He talks about the Cowboys.
How many studio albums?
He's got Beer Bongs and Bentleys. He's got Hollywood is Bleeding. And he's got... I forget what the first one's called. Yours Truly, Austin Post, something like that. So three.
Okay, how many top tens?
I mean, a lot. Probably like five or six.
He has nine.
Yep.
And this is his first of four number ones. This is from Beer Bongs and Bentleys, his second album, his most successful album. It set a lot of streaming records the first day.
That was more popular than Hollywood is Bleeding?
According to streaming numbers,
okay.
Yeah. So the first day of streaming the album, which you if you total up like the songs and all that, 48 million streams on the first day. 48 million on Spotify, which was a new record at the time.
I'm telling you, people, you can hate on Post Malone all you want, and I realize he's, on John Oliver, they called him a Build-A-Bear that spent too long at the tattoo station, which is pretty accurate, but go listen to Beer Bongs and Bentleys, listen to Hollywood is Bleeding.
I'm not going to.
You will find songs that are catchy that, like, you'll be singing along to that you like. Like, that's the thing. Like, he's got earworms regardless of what you think of the guy.
Are all of his songs with the chorus and loop?
What do you mean?
Never mind, you didn't get it.
You're just saying that the whole song is just a chorus? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, pretty much. Here's a stat for you. Took six people to write this song. I figured Post Malone, he's smart enough, he could have probably just wrote this song himself. But he need five others to help him out. So this is basically him putting his own spin on sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
lifestyle.
It's pretty simple. It's not like I'm not saying it's lyrically anything that should be giving you like an epiphany. It's just, you know, it's about being a rock star.
So this is where
surface level.
I count him as a smart guy because I can appreciate this move here. So 7 days after the release, the only part of this song you could get on YouTube is where people just go to listen freely to music without paying any money at all. He just put the chorus on loop because then he wanted to drive people to the streaming site so they could boost his ratings and get to number one. Well, that's what he did, and guess what? The first day of streaming, this song got 25 million streams on Spotify and Pandora.
I mean, what are Post Malone's other number ones? I'm looking it up right now.
You're asking me
I know.
Circles, probably.
Yes, Circles definitely.
Congratulations.
Well, Circles is, I mean, that may be my least favorite song of his. Circles doesn't do much for me.
Congratulations is the same song, like same thing.
Oh, Congratulations is great. Congratulations is great. Psycho, that was a number one. That was good. Sunflower, eh. Circles, eh.
This song was nominated for Record of the Year, or the album was for Record of the Year. Also, Best Rap Performance at the 61st Grammys. He didn't win anything, but this song was also featured.
Well, Post Malone won like 27 Grammys the other night, didn't he?
We're talking about this. We're not talking about 2019 Post Malone. But in 2018, it was featured in the video game WWE 2019, or 2K19, whatever. There's your Post Malone for the year.
I could talk a lot about Post Malone. One of those guys that is a fascinating frontman type of dude to me, but I also love his music. So I'm very much into him and love the music discography to go along with it.
Well, we should.
He's a cool story. All right, so listen. He's this kid from, he's living in Texas, I guess from Syracuse initially, but like he's Texas is where he spent his formative years or whatever, and he just thought he could make some cool beats and stuff on his own and just up and left to go to L.A., American dream, right? Just go to L.A. to see if you can figure it out. And he did figure it out, and he like borrowed a bunch of money from friends and stuff to put together his first song, which is White Iverson. I assume that you've heard White Iverson or seen White Iverson?
I have no idea who that is.
No, I mean, that's a song, and that's the song that blew him up. That's the song that blew him up and got him popular. It charted at, it got to 14 on the U.S. Hot 100 chart, White Iverson, in 2015. So he uses all the money he can to do this song and this music video and got it actually on SoundCloud, I believe, is where it first became really famous. And he's talking about Allen Iverson, and Allen Iverson was one of the people that heard it and thought, like, hey, this is really cool, and said something about it and really helped blow it up. So this grassroots effort, rags to riches, pull yourself up by your bootstrap story, Post Malone goes out to L.A., mortgages his entire future with him and his friends and his parents' money, and it turns him into now, I mean, arguably the most popular musician on the planet. Mm. I mean, he's in that discussion.
Well, you know, text me when he does his grunge album. That'll catch my attention. I think he could kill it. Really, he could bring back grunge if he wanted to.
Well, his Nirvana performance during quarantine, he did like an entire Nirvana album. I think that's what it was, right? It was an entire Nirvana album.
No, well, he was doing like a lot of hits.
Okay. And he was doing it with Barker on the drums, right?
Yes, Travis
Barker. Blink-182 drummer, so obviously playing to a lot of my sensibilities here. It was pretty good. You want me to talk about Post Malone some more? Or?
I actually witnessed Travis Barker get booed at a WrestleMania one time.
Really? Well, that's too bad. Travis Barker's awesome.
In Santa Clara.
Well, how do you hate Travis Barker?
I'm not saying it was me. I'm saying it was like 70,000 others.
How does anybody hate Travis Barker? Anyway, Ask Us Anything's next. Post Malone's lyrics, Hail Mary Prescott touchdown, Mitch. Dak Prescott guy.
Oh.
Dallas guy.
Well, now I love him.
Just trying to tell you. Okay. Everybody go listen to Saint Tropez by Post Malone. That is my favorite Post Malone song.
Like a John making music recommendations.
From Scott Wildcat, if you could have your dinner for free every night, but it had to be the exact same thing for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
God, that's so tough.
Does that mean, can I have it, can I just say Chipotle and utilize the value of the options at Chipotle?
The question says meal, right?
Yeah.
So there's multiple things that can be in a meal. So I would just go like a burrito, like a steak burrito with a side of wings.
That's cheating. That is cheating.
Shrimp.
No, that's
mashed potatoes
cheating.
And I feel mac like, and cheese.
No, you get a main dish and you get conventional sides.
Oh, God.
I'm going to give you two sides because otherwise that's cheating. See, here's where I was trying to
All
think.
Right, well,
I was going to go like if I could do like some chicken parmesan or like something where there's like a chicken element and then a pasta element. So I'm kind of getting two things. So to minimize the amount of like tired that I would get with said meal, I could at least have one or the other some nights.
All right. So since it's every day, I'm going to change the steak option because red meat every day would just murder you. So I will go chicken burrito with two sides. All right. I'm going to go with, this is tough. Give me sweet potato fries. And I'm going to go another potato because I love mashed potatoes. Garlic mashed potatoes.
I think I would just keep it fairly basic because I would want something that's going to be relatively nutritional that is something like fairly easily tolerable. I mean, I eat ground turkey and chicken breast at least 2 times a day, 5 days a week for sure, more bordering on 6 or 7. It would probably just be like a really nicely cooked chicken breast with, I don't even typically go pasta, but for this sake, because of the circumstances, I'll go like with some spaghetti. Give me some spaghetti on the side. And then,
it's not a side.
And then like a Caesar salad.
Fine.
Something like that.
Have your spaghetti and chicken.
Off the top of my head. Off the top of my head.
Yeah, 30 seconds.
What type of tattoo makes you cringe the most? Perfect.
Anything. Perfect. Any like quote. Like a quote on the arm or something like
Mitch,
that.
You had to say face tattoo because we were just talking about Post Malone.
Okay. I didn't even think. See, face tattoos are just so outrageous and stupid. Okay, yes, face tattoos would be the cringy. But just a normal tattoo that a lot of people get, it's the quote on the arm.
My buddy has a giant tattoo of a phoenix on his shoulder blades because his Xbox gamer tag was Radical Phoenix.